The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
This week saw RTE's senior executives go in front of the media committee and address questions in respect of their redundancy programmes, in respect of payments or whether or not they had been received back from Ryan Tuberty, in respect of the ad that they are spending €70,000 on that has apparently, according to some of the newspaper coverage since it was produced, has so aggrieved their own newsroom. Undoubtedly, Patrick O'Donovan, the Minister for Culture, Tourism and Sport, was watching on with interest. He's with us this morning. Minister, good morning.
Morning, Anton, and morning to your listeners.
It's obviously, Minister, one of the things that has emerged from this was the reaction of the executives to the failed IT scheme. Before we get to RTE's failed IT scheme, you had another that arrived on your doorstep, that being the 6.675 million wasted by the Arts Council on a system that never got used. Now we discover, I think, 3.5 million on an RTE IT system similarly written down. What does it say about the cost controls in the agencies under your remit?
Well, first of all, just to put it in perspective, the first of these was made known to me actually on the night that I was appointed to the cabinet on my way home. It was the same night as Star Mayo, and I was told that there was an issue within the Arts Council, and I immediately, assigned myself to trying to find out what had happened in the Arts Council. And what had happened there was, to be quite honest about it, was a staggering loss of taxpayers' money up to about €7 million when you take everything into account. And it had become clear to me that there was a major systems failure and a major governance issue. And immediately I set about putting in place an investigation as to the governance and oversight within the Arts Council, having received cabinet approval to do the same thing. Because this is an absolutely eye-watering amount of money that has been lost here. And at the same time, I also decided, given the fact that this was had been known from the previous June, July, but hadn't been brought to government, I decided to write to all of the agencies under my remit and ask them about capital works that had been done with the support of the department that had received funding from government and had either not been delivered, had been delivered over budget, had failed or whatever. And out of that came the recommendation, or the report from RTE. And on a side to that, we also got within a short few days of me taking office, a report from the National Gallery, where they bought an X-ray machine a number of years earlier and it still hadn't been switched on. So I've been dealing with all of these problems, to be quite honest about it, since I was appointed. And I have an independent committee chaired by Professor Niamh Brennan, looking at the governance, culture, oversight and everything else with regard to RTE.
But what's your initial take? Because, I mean, if you take the RTE thing, because of that bring out your dead exercise that you started, the DG himself had to say, now, albeit the spend was before his time, but he had to say that this 3.5 million write down, the first he heard of it was after you had created this. Does that not point, when you combine it with the 6.5 million, the Arts Council, to a significant endemic problem?
Well, sure, of course it does. And that's why I said I'd go in under the bonnet and find out what more is there. And, you know, a lot of the people that were questioning the RTE executives the other day had also been questioning them back 2 years ago. And every one of them, to a woman and a man, had asked them, is there anything else that we need to know about? Which, of course, there was something else that they needed to know about, but they hadn't been told for whatever reason. And that is an issue, and it remains an issue, that there was an IT system configured by RTE for human resource management and financial modelling that was to cost X, and it didn't cost that. In fact, the human resource modelling never got off the ground at all, and all we got was a financial modelling IT system that essentially cost double the amount that it was originally to cost without any human resource element to it. So, naturally enough, I didn't see all of the committee, but I saw most of it. The committee members were exercised about a number of different issues. And look, this is not the end of the road by any manner of means in terms of the investigations, because there was also a joint Oireachtas committee meeting then that examined the Arts Council's expenditure. That will also go forward to the Public Accounts Committee, who I'm sure will probably look at it in the same level of detail, if not more.
Well, we'll return to RTE in a minute, but can I ask you the big question in respect to the Arts Council? Why do we need an Arts Council?
Well, you need an Arts Council the very same way as you need Sport Ireland. You need an agent of the government that is at arm's length from the government that can look after the artists of Ireland and make sure that the financial supports that are needed to sustain a modern, vibrant, fit for purpose, creative, artistic and cultural sector is there. And ultimately, you know, the government's role should be to oversee the expenditure of same. But in this
case, how do you measure that value, Minister?
Well, look, I mean, if you go around the world, Ireland is synonymous for its cultural output, its literary output, its poetry output, its dance, its song.
The vast majority of which predated the Arts Council. That which we are synonymous with. If you take O'Casey, certainly, if you take Yeats, if you take Joyce, yeah, all sure, of it pre-Arts Council.
Yeah, but like, I mean, look at the film that work that we're producing at the moment through Screen Ireland that has been based on Irish novels. You know, so, I mean, if you go back long enough, sure, you could nearly draw in, you know, the Book of Kells into, should we have the Book of Kells? You don't need any more books. But that's like, that's a red herring of an argument, to be fair, Anton. You do need to support people that are in the creative sector because they have a precarious form of an income. We're not saying that everybody who wants to be a writer needs to go into a monastery like Clan MacKnives and lock themselves away. They need to be supported, and they need to be supported by an organisation that is fit for purpose. But in that context, that organisation has to have regard for the fact that 7 million euros thereabouts is a huge amount of money. And if you take it as, you know, an average taxpayer paying, off the top of my head, 20,000 euros, for instance, tax a year, it would take them 350 years to pay 7 million. So this is an enormous sum of money that's gone. And that's what has exercised me and what has annoyed me so much, and I think has annoyed so many taxpayers. It's not the fact that we have an Arts Council, and it's not the fact that we have a vibrant cultural, artistic community, a lot of young men and young women in, you know, working from hand to mouth around the country, sculptors, dancers, you call it whatever. It is the fact that, this obscene amount of money is gone and nobody cried stop. That's what people are annoyed about.
Let's move back to the issue of money within the other organisation we were discussing, which is RTE. One of the big expenditures facing them at the moment is going to be, I think, in the region of about 15 million for 400 redundancies. Two questions out of that, Minister. First of all, are you satisfied that the redundancies will not just be an exercise in state-funded brain drain as the best leave and take the package? And secondly, are you satisfied that 400 is enough to deliver the cost reductions required?
Well, and the second point first, yes is the answer to the second point, because that's the terms of which have been submitted by RTE to the government. But in relation to who goes, it's a matter for the RTE management to make sure that they sustain the cohort of people and the skill set within the organisation to keep the organisation's front door open. We've been very clear that senior management are not allowed to be part of this, and senior earners are not allowed to be part of this. But we also are very adamant that the organisation needs to be leaner and more efficient, and it needs to lean more heavily on the independent sector for productions. And that's a good thing, because the independent sector in Ireland, you know, I'm putting it into legislation now that RTE will need to spend a particular percentage per annum of public monies on the independent production sector. But as the organisation gets smaller, there will be a requirement for more people in the independent sector to produce the type of programming that we have seen, for instance, that have been successful, whether people like it or not, from an RTE perspective, which is Dancing with the Stars, which is a huge revenue generator for the organisation based on the audiences that watch it.
Can I ask, in respect then of salaries and payments within the organisation, there's been a lot of coverage around the pay cap for presenters in RTE. And the ostensible logic of it was that nobody would be paid greater than the director general.
Yeah.
But when the salary cap is talked about, it's capped at €250,000, though the DG is on 337. Do you know, first of all, which it is? Is it 337 is the cap or 250?
So I don't have the figure in front of me, but you're right with regard to the director general's pay. And I'm going to look at this in the round. So once we have gotten to a situation where we have a slimmed down, smaller organisation, obviously at that stage, that will be a chance for us to see, well, where are the efficiencies now being made in terms of the monies that have been given to RTE? Because RTE is essentially in a bailout at the moment. It's like the country when it went through a troika. It's being kept open by virtue of the government's support. We know that the television licence has recovered some bit, not sufficiently enough to release it from the state support. But in return for the state giving the amount of money which we're giving, which is, again, an enormous sum of money, We need to see change in the organisation, and that change has to be to stack it. The organisation has to be smaller. It also has to be more responsive, and it also has to try and draw back audiences that are lost, particularly to online streamers, where our younger audiences have moved en masse. And that will be a huge challenge for RTE, but it's one I think that the Director General is up for.
Can I ask in respect to that, Minister, because one of the things about the salary cap is that it's strangely arbitrary because it doesn't take into account the amount of time that the individuals work. So if I can give you a case in point, Patrick Healy is paid €250,000 ostensibly per year, but his year is one day a week for 30 days. So if he worked a five-day week, a la Jimmy Kimmel or a la Letterman or any of the US hosts, his actual pay would be north of $2 million. Likewise, if you take a Brendan O'Connor, he earns 250-ish, but it's for 2 days. If that was a five-day week, it'd be 620,000 per annum.
Not if it's kept at a per annum cap. But you're right in relation to output. And it is something that when I was a member of the Communications Committee, that I had a particular bone to pluck with RT, which when I was a backbencher, you're absolutely right with regard to output. People working for 1 or 2 days a week. Now they'll tell you that, oh, well, there's a lot of research and there's a lot of preparation to be done. But actually, behind the mic or in front of the camera, that is something that I have a concern about, to be quite honest about it. And it's something that the previous government didn't look at, but it's something that I intend to look at with RTE going forward. Is, you know, in return for the monies that we're paying, and it's, you know, whether it is RTE, Patrick O'Donovan, or the taxpayer, whoever, it's all public money because RTE is entirely public service. We're going to have to look at, as we look at efficiencies, we're also going to have to look at outputs. You asked a while ago, how do we measure outputs within the Arts Council and within our artists? Well, you know, we have to start looking at output with regard to our broadcasters. That's
but
very
But it's not
clear.
Going to put the broadcaster in a terrible corner, because I'm sure if you turn to Patrick Healy and say, look, we're 250,000 cap in total, therefore we're dividing you by five, we now pay you 50 grand. He says goodbye.
Not necessarily. And I mean, this was always RT's big, fear that they tried to drag down onto the Oireachtas when I was back in 2011, 2012, when I was probably one of the only people talking about how much RT was costing the state at the time. They always said, oh, well, if you look at to see how much the presenters are getting paid, that you might spook the horses and they might go. And to which I would always ask, and where exactly would they go to? There's a very small market here. Let's be real. One or two people might make it big in the United Kingdom, but there isn't room for everybody in the United Kingdom. You know, there isn't. And that's the reality.
But you do have significant precedence of people leaving the state broadcasters to other jobs. I mean, you have Ray Darcy, you have Tony Fenton, you have Ian Dempsey,
sure,
you have Darragh O'Brien.
One of the names you mentioned there went back.
That doesn't suggest that they don't leave for pay. There is a lot of evidence of people leaving for pay.
Yeah, but it's also no reason to suggest that there isn't a younger generation of broadcasters that are well capable of putting Patrick O'Donovan through his paces that are coming up. You know, I mean, natural progression shouldn't mean that we just have to wait for retirements. Sure, if that was the case in politics, we'd be like North Korea if that was in politics. We'd never see a younger person ever get into politics. But what's wrong with refreshing an organisation and saying to somebody, you know, it's time for somebody new to get a chance?
No, but my question is, if you have people who are currently paid by virtue of very low output, a multiple of what it looks like they're paid. I mean, if you take that example of the Late Late Show, how do you manage to bring that into what is a real pay cap without making it the lowest salary people walk?
Well, I think it has to be taken in the round, and I think it can't not be up for discussion. And I think it can't not be taken as part of the broader picture. And I do think that there's room for it to be looked at. And I'm not saying that I'm going to, you know, unilaterally impose my view on RT, on the Anton Savage Show on a Saturday morning. But I think certainly as the licence fee is recovered and as people are going back to paying the licence fee more, they do expect things will change. And just because that's the way we did things back in 2011 and 2012, when the company was buying flip-flops to beat the band, that doesn't mean that's the way we should be doing things into the future.
By the way, one final thing out of the committee testimony, Kevin Backhurst was asked about whether or not monies had been received from Ryan Tuberty in respect to the €150,000 that he said he would repay if the work was not done, that being the events for Renault, which did not happen. Do you think, A, he should pay it back, and B, he will?
Look, that's a matter for RT, and RT are obviously trying to pursue that. And I've no doubt that Kevin Backhurst will pursue it, because that was the suggestion that he made. That's certainly the suggestion that I heard at the committee the other day. And if he is going to pursue it, you know, more power to him. I hope he does.
But it's your expectation that Backhurst will pursue repayment of that money?
But sure, at the original committee meetings, that was the that was what the committee was led to believe, that this would be pursued. I don't think anything has changed. So if it was to be pursued 2 years ago, I don't see why it shouldn't be pursued now.
Finally, you have created a new State Commemorations Advisory Committee, and you have appointed a chairman, that being Brian Dobson.
I have. I've created a committee basically to help me and to advise me around the state's commemorations for the next couple of years. This is a very important role, to be honest about it. And it's not a role that I created without giving an awful lot of thought to. And Brian Dobson, you know, is the chairman, is a very well-regarded, independent broadcaster of many years, has interviewed everybody and anybody down through the years, covered the peace process and everything else. So has a keen knowledge of history, modern Irish history himself, from a perspective that I think is really unique given his journalistic capability. And I've also put two former ministers from my department, Eamon O'Queeve and Heather Humphreys, both of whom in their own way were very responsible for commemorations. Heather leading the decade of centenaries from 2012 onwards, and Eamon O'Queeve did the earlier part of the preparation work. So they have a wealth of experience between them. Two different traditions represented here as well. You know, one the grandson of the founder of Fianna Fáil, another a granddaughter of a Presbyterian Ulster, who has herself described herself as a 1798 Republican. So look, they bring a wealth of experience and a wealth of knowledge, and I think that them together with the historians that are on it, including people from the National Archives, will give a great insight for me with regard to the work that I need to be focused on around commemorations, because commemorations can be very tricky, and commemoration language can be very tricky around commemorations, and we know that, and some people can get very offended quite easily. And
will their role be to advise on existing planned commemorations, or will it be to come to you with what should be suggestions as to what might be done?
Both. And, you know, the Royal Irish Academy have done a list for the next number of years of the kind of centenaries, bicentenaries and 250ths that are coming up. So this year we have, for instance, the 250th anniversary of the birth of Daniel O'Connell. Next year is the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence in the United States, which was pockmarked by Irish people, you know, in terms of the number of people from that signed it, that had direct connection to the island of Ireland. And even those that organised the printing of it were from the island of Ireland. And as well as that, then, you know, we have a number of different presidents of the United States, and my colleague Edward Timmons from Wicklow has done an awful lot of work on this with regard to presidents from of the United States of America who are not just from the kind of Hiberno-Catholic background, but are from the Scots Presbyterian background, who we don't know anything about in this state really, but who made a huge contribution. So there's work to be done on a North-South basis as well with the Northern Ireland Executive and with the Ulster Scots Agency, and this committee will advise me as to how that should be done and how we commemorate those people who made such a massive contribution, for instance, to the birth of the United States of America.
Minister, thank you very much for your time this morning. That is Patrick O'Donovan, who is Minister for Sports, Culture and Media.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.